Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week, we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us this week and for the next few episodes as we hear stories about the holidays. This episode is all about holidays that take place in December. For further information about December holidays for children, I suggest www.unitedplanet.org. Here are two stories about Hanukkah, the Jewish celebration commemorating a difficult time, faith, and tradition. Both have been provided by Lauren Spector, so thank you, Lauren. The first one tells the story of how dreidels, a kind of spinning top that children play with, came to be. It is called A Serious Game by Rabbi Yair Kobernik. Over 2,000 years ago, during a time when the city of Jerusalem had been taken over by the Greek army, many Jewish families had to live in caves. These were difficult times. The Greeks did not want the Jewish people to practice their religion. The only people who were allowed to stay in the city were the ones who agreed to become like the Greeks. However, there were some who just wouldn't give in. To accept the Greeks' new rules would be like saying, being Jewish doesn't matter. Those people felt that no matter what, it was very important to preserve their laws and live a life abiding by the Torah, the holy book of the Jewish faith, just as the Jews had done for so many generations already. If they would give up, then the Jewish people would be totally wiped out and forgotten about. And so this story takes place in one of those caves where Jewish children would meet their rabbi every day to learn and study in secret. "Today we will learn about Joseph," smiled Rabbi Shmuel as he taught the class a lesson from the Torah. Suddenly a little boy named Ephraim came running in. "Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shmuel, they're coming! A whole group of Greek soldiers are on their way up the path. We saw them, we saw them." "Okay," said Rabbi Shmuel with confidence. "Everything is going to be all right. Quickly, everyone, put their writing boards away right now and start playing games. Ephraim and Eliezer, go back outside and play near the entrance to the cave." "Okay, Rabbi Shmuel," said Ephraim and Eliezer as they nervously headed for the cave entrance. "Ephraim, here they come, they're getting closer," said Eliezer, full of terror as he looked down the path. "What are we going to do if they ask us questions?" "Don't worry, I'll take care of that," said Ephraim. The soldiers approached the two boys. One soldier said, "Here they are. This must be the place where Torah learning is going on." Another said, "What are you doing here, you boys?"
"Don't you see, sir?" answered Ephraim with respect. "We're just playing."
"Do you know who lives in this cave?" shouted the soldier.
"Sure," said Ephraim with confidence. "Shmuel ben Yehuda. He lives here with his family."
"Hey," called out one of the other soldiers. "I hear voices of children coming from inside." "Why are there so many children inside that cave?" asked the head soldier.
"Oh, they're friends of Rabbi Shmuel's children," answered Ephraim. "They have come to play together."
"Then why aren't you two inside there with them?" shouted the Greek soldier. Ephraim wasn't ready for such a question. He became nervous and was afraid the soldiers would realize that the children were really studying the Torah, a clear violation of the Greek rules. Then little Eliezer spoke up for the first time.
"We came outside to play because we were upset with the others. We don't want to play with them anymore."
"Aha," said the soldier, but it seemed like he didn't buy their story. Without any further notice, he barged into the cave in anticipation of catching the little children learning from the Torah. To his surprise, he found them all sitting on the floor in pairs, spinning tops that are called dreidels. The dreidels were made out of wood and had four sides to them. Each side had a Hebrew letter written on it. By this time, the head soldier was getting a little upset with his comrades. He asked one, "Why did you bring me here? These children are just playing games." "We were sure that they were learning the Torah," replied the youngest soldier. "Well, maybe there is some secret about those little tops they're playing with," wondered the head soldier. "Hey, you," he called to one of the children. "Give me that top you're playing with. What do those letters mean?"
"Oh," said the boy, they're just the initials of different names of the children. The letter Nun stands for Nachman. The letter Himmel stands for Gedaliah, the letter Yud stands for Yehuda, and the letter Pe stands for Pinchas. The head soldier had had enough. We are wasting our time here. And the soldiers all left the cave and started back down the path to the city. Rabbi Shmuel just smiled and told the children, "You see, the danger has passed. We're all right. Now tell me, what is the real meaning of those letters you wrote on the sides of the dreidels?" Eliezer came forward and said, "Nun, Himmel, Yud, and Peh? They really stand for, a great miracle will happen here." "Amen," smiled Rabbi Shmuel. "May your words come true." The next story is also about Hanukkah in more modern times. Here is The Lost Dreidel by Leora Dina. Little Abraham could not find his dreidel. Hanukkah was going to start in just a few hours. He was very upset. 2 years earlier, when he was only 6 years old, his beloved grandfather had made him a dreidel out of wood. He had received it on the first night of Hanukkah. Now Abraham was 8, and he knew he had disobeyed an important rule. He wasn't supposed to play with the dreidel until the first day of Hanukkah, but he had pulled it out the night before. Now it was gone. He had no idea what had happened to it. His little sister Sarah came into the room. She had been too young to play with a dreidel, so when she asked Abraham why he was so sad, he simply said, "I can't find my dreidel, and it's the first night of Hanukkah." Turning towards her, tears in his eyes, he added, "What am I going to do?" Laughing, she asked, "So what's the big deal about Hanukkah?" Abraham was surprised, but then realized that his little sister probably hadn't learned yet about this amazing holiday. Well, without the dreidel and time to spare, he decided to take the time to tell little Sarah all about the special celebration. "Let me tell you why my dreidel is so important," and Abraham sat next to Sarah and began to tell his story. "A long time ago, our ancestors were told they couldn't worship the way they wished. The Greek Empire had conquered all of the country that the Jewish people had occupied. Children weren't allowed to learn anything about our Jewish faith, but the rabbis figured out a way to teach the children without being caught. They did this by carving a wooden top, a dreidel. This way, when the soldiers came to visit, they saw the children playing with this top, not realizing that at the same time, they were really learning about our religion. This went on for a long time until one day, a group of our ancestors called the Maccabees were so tired of the Greek laws that they went to war and won. There had been a beautiful temple that was all but destroyed, but inside the ruins, there was one very small container of oil that was left. The Maccabees thought they would light the oil in celebration and realized it probably would only last for maybe, at best, one day. But a miracle happened. That oil lasted for 8 whole days." Sarah's eyes widened in shock. 8 days? Why, I don't know of anything that burns that long." Abraham just smiled at his little sister. "Well, that's the miracle, Sarah. And to this day, we celebrate Hanukkah by lighting candles for 8 whole days to remember that time when we almost lost everything." Suddenly, the front door opened. Abraham couldn't see who had come in, but he guessed it was his grandfather. What would he think when he found that Abraham had lost his dreidel? A few moments passed. Abraham guessed that Grandpa had gone into the kitchen first to see Grandma. Little Sarah saw him first. "Grandpa!" she called out and ran to her beloved grandfather. Taking her into his arms, Grandpa walked into the room and saw Abraham still sitting on the floor with his head down. Abraham couldn't bear to tell his beloved grandfather that he had lost his dreidel, the one he had given to him. "Abraham," called Grandpa, "don't you have a hug and kiss for me?" And he put Sarah down and walked over to his grandson. "Here, boy, get up and give me a kiss." Slowly, Abraham stood up and walked toward his grandfather. He put his arms around him and in a soft voice simply said, "Oh, Grandpa, I'm so sorry. I lost the dreidel you gave me, and I don't know how you will ever forgive me." But his grandfather said nothing, just gave him a big hug. "No worries, no worries, my child," he said. Then, with a little smile and a twinkle in his eye, he said, "Come on now, you two wash up and meet me in the kitchen. We have to light the menorah because it is dark now outside."
"Grandpa," said Sarah, "Abraham told me the story of Hanukkah about the 8 days the oil burned. So why does the menorah have 9 candles?" Grandpa placed her on his lap and, turning to look at the menorah, said, "My sweet little granddaughter, that's because it is the candle, the ninth candle, which lights all the others." Grandma added, "And there are 44 candles altogether. We light one, then two, then three, and so on for each of the 8 days of Hanukkah." Abraham just kept silent. Grandpa looked at Grandma with a twinkle in his eye. "Grandma, I know we don't usually give gifts, but today is special. Why don't you show the children what I have brought them?" And Grandma turned to the shelf and picked up not one, but two dreidels. Grandpa had taken Abraham's dreidel in order to make an exact copy for Sarah. "You see, Abraham," and Grandpa smiled, "you didn't lose it. I took it to make one for your little sister, exactly like yours. Now you can have your dreidel back, and Sarah has her very own." "Thank you, thank you," cried Abraham, and kissed his beloved grandfather's cheek. It was a happy Hanukkah after all. The next story comes from Europe and is a sweet story with Christmas magic. It's called The Wood Shoe of Little Wolf. Once upon a time, there was a little boy, just 7 years old, whose name was Wolf. He was an orphan and lived with his aunt, a hard-hearted old woman who never kissed him but once a year and who sighed with regret every time she gave him a bowlful of soup. The poor little boy was so sweet-tempered that he loved the old woman in spite of her bad treatment. As Wolf's aunt was known to have a house of her own and a woolen stocking full of gold, she did not dare to send her nephew to the school for the poor, but she wrangled so that the schoolmaster of the rich boy's school was forced to lower his price and admit little Wolf among his pupils. The schoolmaster was vexed to have a boy so meanly clad and who paid so little, and he punished little Wolf severely without cause, ridiculed him, and even incited against him his comrades, who were the sons of rich citizens. They made the orphan their drudge and mocked at him so much that the little boy was miserable and hid himself away in corners to cry. On the Christmas Eve, the schoolmaster was to take all his pupils to the midnight mass and then to conduct them home again to their parents' houses. Now, as the winter was very severe and a quantity of snow had fallen within the past few days, the boys came to the place of meeting warmly wrapped up, with fur-lined caps drawn down over their ears, padded jackets, gloves and knitted mittens, and good strong shoes with thick soles. Only little Wolf presented himself shivering in his thin everyday clothes and wearing on his feet socks and wooden shoes. His comrades tried to annoy him in every possible way, but the orphan was so busy warming his hands by blowing on them that he paid no heed to the taunts of the others. Then the band of boys, marching two by two, started for the parish church. It was comfortable inside the church, and the pupils, made lively by the gentle warmth, the sound of the organ, and the singing of the choir, began to chatter in low tones. They boasted of the midnight treats awaiting them at home. The son of the mayor had seen, before leaving the house, a monstrous goose larded with truffles so that it looked like a black spotted leopard. Another boy told of the fir tree waiting for him, on the branches of which hung oranges, sugar plums, and punchinellos. Then they talked about what the Christ child would bring them, or what he would leave in their shoes, which they would certainly be careful to place before the fire when they went to bed. And their eyes sparkled with delight as they thought of the many gifts they would find on waking. The pink bags of burnt almonds, the bonbons, lead soldiers standing in rows, menageries, and magnificent jumping jacks dressed in purple and gold. Little Wolf knew well that his miserly old aunt would send him to bed without any supper, but as he had been good and industrious all the year, he trusted that the Christ child would not forget him, so he meant that night to set his wooden shoes on the hearth. The midnight mass was ended. The worshippers hurried away, anxious to enjoy the treats awaiting them in their homes. Now, under the church porch, seated on a stone bench, was a child asleep, a little child, dressed in a white garment and with bare feet exposed to the cold. He was not a beggar, for his dress was clean and new, and, beside him upon the ground, tied in a cloth, were the tools of a carpenter's apprentice. Under the light of the stars, his face with its closed eyes shone with an expression of divine sweetness, and his soft, curling hair seemed to form an aureole of light above his forehead. But his tender feet, blue with the cold on this cruel night of December, were pitiful to see. The pupils, so warmly clad and shod, passed with indifference before the unknown child, but little Wolf, coming last out of the church, stopped, deeply moved before the beautiful sleeping child. "Alas," said the orphan to himself, "how dreadful! This poor little one goes without stockings in weather so cold, and what is worse, he has no shoe to leave beside him while he sleeps, so that the Christ child may place something in it to comfort him in all of his misery." And carried away by his tender heart, little Wolf drew off the wooden shoe from his right foot, placed it before the sleeping child, and, as best as he was able, now hopping, now limping, and wetting his sock in the snow, he returned to his aunt. "You good for nothing!" cried the old woman, full of rage, as she saw that one of his shoes was gone. "What have you done with your shoe, you little beggar?" Little Wolf did not know how to lie, and though shivering with terror, he tried stammering to tell his adventure. But the old miser burst into frightful laughter. "Ah, the sweet young master takes off his shoe for a beggar? Ah, master spoils a pair of shoes for a barefoot? This is something new indeed. Ah, well, since things are so, I will place the shoe that is left in the fireplace, and tonight the Christ child will put in a rod to whip you when you wake. And tomorrow you shall have nothing to eat but water and dry bread, and we shall see if the next time you will give away your shoe to the first vagabond that comes along." And saying this, the wicked woman gave him a box on each ear and made him climb to his wretched room in the loft. There, the heartbroken little one lay down in the darkness, and drenching his pillow with tears, fell asleep. But in the morning, when the old woman awakened by the cold and shaken by her cough, descended to the kitchen, oh, wonder of wonders, she saw the great fireplace filled with bright toys, magnificent boxes of sugar plums, riches of all sorts, and in front of all this treasure, the wooden shoe which her nephew had given to the vagabond, standing beside the other shoe, which she herself had placed there the night before, intending to put in it a handful of switches. And as little Wolf, who had come running at the cries of his aunt, stood in speechless delight before all the splendid Christmas gifts, there came great shouts of laughter from the street. The old woman and the little boy went out to learn what it was all about, and saw the gossips gathered around the public fountain. What could have happened? Oh, a most amusing and extraordinary thing. The children of all the rich men of the city, whose parents wished to surprise them with the most beautiful gifts, had found nothing but switches in their shoes. Then the old woman and little Wolf remembered with alarm all the riches that were in their own fireplace, but just then they saw the pastor of the parish church arriving with his face full of perplexity. Above the bench near the church door, in the very spot where the night before a child, dressed in white, with bare feet exposed to the great cold, had rested his sleeping head, the pastor had seen a golden circle wrought into the old stones. Then all the people knew that the beautiful sleeping child, beside whom had lain the carpenter's tools, was the Christ child himself, and that he had rewarded the faith and charity of little Wolf. Next, we travel south of the border to hear a story. Dr. Joel Poinsett, who was the first ambassador to Mexico, brought a bright red star-shaped flower to the United States. It was given the name Poinsettia in his honor. It is also known as Flame Leaf or Flower of the Holy Night. Here is The Legend of the Poinsettia, a Christmas story from Mexico. There was once a brother-sister pair who were very poor. They lived in a small village and had barely enough to eat two full meals a day. As Christmas time approached, festivities, parades, and parties in the village attracted the children. The gaiety of the season in itself was wonderful. Moreover, a large manger scene was being set up in the village church, and all the children were eager to go to baby Jesus and give him their best present. Maria and Pablo also wanted to give presents to the Holy Child. While all the children were discussing what they thought was best for the baby and what they would buy as a gift for him, Maria and Pablo knew that they had no money at all to buy any present and had nothing that they could give as a gift to the child. They were determined to go to church and see the boy child. So on Christmas Eve, Maria and Pablo set out for the village church a little earlier than the others to attend the service. Since they had nothing to give to the child, they thought of picking some weeds that were growing along the roadside so as to make a soft bed for baby Jesus and to decorate his crib. While they were still decorating the crib of the baby, the other children arrived. Now, children can be very cruel when it comes to teasing and making fun of others. They joked and laughed at the scraggly weeds that Maria and Pablo were placing in the crib. Maria and Pablo were almost in tears for shame and helplessness when a miracle occurred. Suddenly, the weeds burst into bright red petals that looked like stars and were so beautiful that everyone was awestruck with their beauty. Everybody realized and said that a gift of love is dearer to Jesus than the most expensive presents that money could buy. Ever since that day, poinsettia flowers have become favorites for Christmas decorations. Kwanzaa is a holiday that celebrates African American and African culture. Kwanzaa is celebrated by over 20 million people worldwide and is the fastest growing holiday. This last story is about one of the cornerstones of Kwanzaa, faith. Here is The Collared Crow. Once upon a time, there were a man and his wife who had lived together for many years, but they had no children to look after them in their old age. This was very sad for them, but they had no idea what to do about it. You can neither make nor order children, nor do they grow on trees. So the only answer was to wait for a miracle, which in stories still may happen. One day, as they were sowing their fields, they saw an unusually large flock of birds swoop down to pick up the seeds. Soon, there were no seeds left at all. What to do? There were only a few remaining seeds in their bag, and they had no idea where to find more. For in those days, the farmers kept only one bag full of seeds for their crop next year, and if that was lost, there would be famine. Now, what should they do? The farmer said to his wife, "We shall have to keep these few remaining grains and wait till the birds have gone. It's no use sowing now. They will come back, those flying robbers, and eat our last stock of seeds." The wife agreed, but someone else did not. It was a large white-collared crow who alighted in front of them and began to speak in human language. "Dear friends, do not withhold from us the seeds that we need to survive. Give us all your seeds, and we, the birds of the sky, promise you that great happiness and prosperity will come to you, but you must do exactly as I tell you." The poor people accepted the proposal. They had very little option, for where could they go to get new seeds? As it was, they would probably starve, and in such an extreme emergency, there is reason to take great risks to win greater gains. So the farmer opened his sack, took out the few remaining seeds, and scattered them all for the hungry birds. Having pecked up the seeds, the birds bowed and flew away. Then the big crow stepped forward again and spoke thus, "In the name of all my bird brothers, I thank you both for your generosity. I will now give you your reward. Listen carefully and do exactly as I tell you. Take a cow, slaughter it, skin it, take the horns and the feet, the heart and the liver, the kidneys and the lungs, the stomach and the gut. Remember, 8 sets of organs you must take out. Then you put these together, all 8 of them, in the skin and sew it up carefully so that no light can enter it. Then you must cook the meat and give it to your friends. Invite all of your neighbors and relatives for a feast. After that, wait till tomorrow morning. Let no light shine into your hut, neither of sun nor moon. Do not touch the cow skin or its contents until you hear the cocks crow. No matter what you hear or see, stay quiet until sunrise." The good farmer and his wife did everything exactly as the crow had instructed them. They said goodbye to their only cow, then killed it, skinned it carefully, put all of the organs back inside and sewed it up carefully. Later that day, they invited all their friends and neighbors and cooked the meat for them. That night, when the guests had left, the farmer and his wife went to bed. But do you think they could sleep? Not a wink. They just lay there in the dark, wondering what that cowskin was doing. Suddenly, a gust of wind broke into the hut. Then all was quiet again. The farmer and his wife were frightened, but they kept as still as mice who have smelled a cat. But were they the only living beings in the hut? They had a feeling that the skin began moving, as if there was a living being in it, and it seemed to be growing, for the movement increased. The hide appeared to be swelling up, and sometimes it almost rolled over to one side. Later in the night, and you understand that the farmer and his wife did not sleep for a minute, they heard little voices coming from inside their cowskin, thus,
"Go away, feet, you are stepping on me,"
or,
"Move over, stomach, you are taking too much room,"
or,
"Turn over, horns, you are pricking me."
After a long wait, the sky turned gray and the first cocks began to crow. The man and his wife heaved deep sighs, for it had been a frightening night, but neither spoke a word. Finally, when the sun appeared over the hill crests, the farmer rose, took his knife, and cut the leather straps that tied the cowskin together. The skin fell open to all sides like a sunflower opening in the morning, and you'll never guess. Inside, there were 8 babies. Yes, 8. They were all healthy and kicking, and what was more, they could already talk. They said,
"Thank you, Mum and Dad, for letting us out."
And, "We were cramped in that narrow place." And, "There was less and less room for us in there. And how nice to be out in the open." They all talked like village elders, and their parents were speechless with joy until the children said,
"I'm hungry,"
one after another. What to do? Good advice was dear. Suddenly, they heard a familiar voice. It was the white-collared crow on the doorstep, addressing the happy parents just at this crucial moment when they were wondering what to feed their newly born children.
"Listen carefully again," spoke the crow after bidding them good morning. "Take the dung from your cow, collect it carefully, and burn it in the middle of your garden."
Away he flew, and the farmer's wife went immediately to the cow pen to pick up all the old dung, while the farmer went to his garden and dug a deep hole. They put the dung in the hole and covered it over, and lo, the next day when the sun rose, as they looked out of their hut, there stood a tree, very green and full of foliage. It even had fruits, and in the tree there perched the white-collared crow, who said,
"Good morning, my friends. Now remember, this tree will always have enough fruits for you and all your children, but you must not eat the seeds. They are for my bird brothers, so always collect the seeds from these fruits and scatter them for us. And as long as you do that, this green tree will provide food for both our kinds in plenty."
And thus it happened. The parents picked fruits every day, which they gave their children, and they told them never to swallow a seed, but to throw out all the seeds in the field so that the birds could eat them. In due course of time, many fruit trees grew up, and the farmer became the owner of an orchard, which was a good thing, for his children grew up, married, and had children and grandchildren who were also fed on the excellent fruits of the tree. The once poor farmer became a great chief because he had listened carefully to the words of the white-collared crow. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll travel around the world to hear stories about the holidays from Asia and other exotic locations. This is Guima saying goodbye and happy reading.